listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
With the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have drummer extraordinaire, and he is a badass, Mr. Gene Coy. Say hello, Gene.
Hey.
How are you, dude?
I'm good. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. So you and I are in a blues trio, but I want to jump right in because I read some of your bio, and I was like, this guy taught himself how to play. Tell me how you got into drums, and what was the moment of zen that made you want to be a drummer?
Man, ever since I can remember, man, it was just that euphoric feeling of like being like a kid in a candy store. Like whenever I saw drums, heard drums, you know, I was just drawn to it, drawn to the instrument. Just at a young age, man, you know, I'm talking about my mom's pots and pans and Tupperware and boxes around house and show and tell and art class. I'm drawing drum sets and shit. You know what I mean? Like it was.
That's awesome. Were you listening to jazz at a young age, or like were your family like listening to like blues and soul or rock, or what were they listening to?
Yeah, well, there was always good music playing around the house. My dad, he had an extensive record collection because back in the day he used to DJ parties and stuff. So he was always spinning something, you know, like a lot of disco, funk, and jazz and stuff. And my mom was like in church, so she was always had the gospel music popping, you know. But she was also into like a lot of cool hip jazz stuff too. Like, you know, she put me onto like Roy Ayers and
wow,
like Johnny Guitar Watson, you know, like that's the type of stuff.
He's one of my favorites, yeah. Dude. Johnny Guitar Watson. He is a badass. We need to cover him, dude. I didn't know you even loved him. That's crazy.
Dude, are you kidding? Dude, that's like my favorite, bro.
Yeah, he's one of the baddest of the bad. And, you know, it's he's not on a lot of people's playlists. So the fact that you pulled that out, I'm like, man
he come
is
on, man.
Top of the heap, dude.
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm with it. I'm with it, man.
Of course you are. So did your parents play or anything? Do you have any siblings that played?
No, my parents didn't play. My mom, like, sang in the choir, you know. The church, so I mean, I was exposed to music like on Sunday mornings. I was right there, like glued to the drums, you know, like
right
sitting close trying to see if I can get in, you know what I mean. My uncle played bass, like back in the day and stuff, and so he played bass for his church, but other than that, no, it was, you know, it was pretty much just like me and my environment. You know, my sisters didn't do anything musical, they sang a little bit, you know.
And did you, like, when did you get your first hands on a drum kit? Was it like school, like marching band, something like that, jazz band?
I mean, like playing in church, you know, being able to just grow up in church, that was looking forward to Sunday morning because I would get to play drums, you know what I mean?
Right, so, right. And you started, like what? How old were you? You must have been like 13, 14, something like
younger
that?
Younger than that. Young, I'm talking about a baby. I'm talking about a baby. I'm talking about a baby, bro. Like, I was one of those. You see, I don't know if you've ever been in church like that, where you were just like, you go to the church and it's like that first pew by the drums is probably like six little kids all in line, ready with their drumsticks, ready to play, like hitting on the back of the pews. Like that was me. I was one of those kids. You know,
that's awesome. And were you said you were playing all gospel hymns and stuff like that?
Gospel music, like church songs, like, you know.
So what? You were like seven, even younger than that?
Probably younger than that, yes. Just started very, very young.
That is crazy. And when did you actually like sit behind a kit and like be the drummer for the gospel band?
Man, that happened probably when I was 10, maybe.
Wow.
Age 10, if that, you know, like where I was like, oh, okay, I can hold the service down. I don't need no help. No, you know what I mean? Like,
well, and you're like, you know, a lot of people don't really realize, but especially in the gospel church, the drummer is the heartbeat of the whole service. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, and the environment is very encouraging too. Like they like go, you know, they really want you to excel, and they like you know, a lot of them, you know, that's your calling. You know, God called you to be this drummer. You know, they'll do anything in their power to see you through. You'll see you through it. You know, like, man, you need some drumsticks. I got you. You need this. Like, you need, you know. Wow.
That's amazing. That's, you know, like a communal thing that is, I think, missing in schools now. It's missing in a lot of communities, too. You're lucky that you have that. I kind of feel like that's, like, one of the outliers. You know, you were born in the right place, in the right time, the right community, yeah, to have that kind of nurturing. Because most people don't have access to drum kits at 5.
A lot of people don't. A lot of people don't.
Which is crazy.
I mean, once a week, that was it. You know what I mean? Like, I go home and be me and my Tupperware, my mom's pots and pans, and my mom getting pissed because her pans got dents and shit. You know what I mean? The pot was all dents. You know what I mean? Like, but it was like my, you know, I wasn't supposed to, but my auntie would babysit. My aunt be like, go ahead.
Wow.
Mom be like, go ahead, play.
And when was the moment that you kind of like were like, this is it, I want to do this and nothing else? Because there's, you know, there's definitely a shift. Like when you're like playing for fun and then you realize, yo, I don't want this to be fun. I want this to be everything. You know, it's,
well,
everything.
You know, just watching my peers, there was this guy who was older than me, but he was like my mentor, you know, his name is Terry Banks. And just watching him and be the great drummer that he was, I was like, damn, man, he's so respected and, you know, feared, you know, in a certain sense, you know what I mean? Like, you know, when he comes to sit on the drums, like the shit gonna just turn to a whole other level. The music just turns up, like the caliber just turns, you know what I mean? And it's like, I want to be like that, like very tasteful and very strong in music, you know?
Right. And it's also when you hear cats like that, when they're so seasoned, it's like, you can't help but be in awe. You know, you just like, cause all the vibrations just elevate in the room. It's like, it becomes chemical. You know, it's like there's certain times where it's just like, this is whatever this is the liveliest thing. And I love that it was a mentor like that for you. Who was like one of your favorite drummers that you were listening to? Was it like Max Roach, Clyde Stubblefield, a little bit of everything?
At a young age, man, I didn't even know. I was really into gospel music. So I was listening to Terry Banks, the dude I was talking about. And Calvin Rogers was a huge influence. If y'all know, remember
Calvin Rogers.
Man, check him out.
Dude, I always like gospel music has like the most happening bands, the most happening cats, the best players. They're all coming from the church, man.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them came from Chicago. So like, and he's one of those Chicago goats that was like on every gospel, major gospel recorder. They sought out this rhythm. They sought out this rhythm section. Because they were just like, yo, they got a special thing. Like, so for a while, he was on every major gospel, like, album. You know, all these major gospel artists, they were like, oh, we got to get this cat, this band, you know. Like,
that's awesome.
So, yeah, listening to him, that was encouraging. Like, damn. Like,
like this, and it's like humble pie and inspiration at the same time. It's
yeah.
Like,
and these guys are in Chicago, man. So, like, imagine me, like, I go to college, and I'm like, you know, I'm out here in Cali, like, in college, and I come home for Christmas, and everybody, you know, that's what everybody do. Everybody's coming home for Christmas,
right.
And there'll be this concert in Chicago, where it'll be, like, all the major, like, big choirs will come together and do, like a big, like, a mass choir for Christmas,
oh my God,
like a Christmas
that's concert, awesome.
And so it'll be, like, all the musicians coming from around the world who live in Chicago, who used to live in Chicago, come back, you know, and be, like, so you, like, there's like, it's like historic footage of like cats being like surrounding the rhythm section with like their little camcorders and stuff. Like before there was camera phones, you know what I mean? Like everybody got the little camcorders standing around the drums, getting this early YouTube footage. You know what I mean? This band just killing. You know what I mean? Like I was there for one of those nights. You know what I mean? So it's like I remember the magic of it was like all these cats coming together. You're like, damn, this is the best of the best. The best choirs combined. The best singers combined. The best musicians combined.
And they would do it with no rehearsals, too, which is crazy. It's like, what? Just like off the cuff, everybody knows the tunes, everybody knows the arrangements, and it just feels like they've been on the road together for like 9 months. It's just crazy, and it's amazing, too. And also, like, you know, you grew up in Chicago, so you're also pulling from everybody's coming through, you know, just on tours. When it's not Christmas, when you're growing up, you're hearing players come and do master classes or clinics, or, you know, they're doing gigs or they're playing with certain friends. You know what I mean? Just because you're in this like major downtown city that has so much of a music scene. Did you have any kind of music in the schools too? Did you have like a jazz band? And
oh man, yeah. Like, and when I got to middle school, it was like, oh, I could, you know, elementary school, you could do band, but it was like, oh, you can play concert snare drum, or you can play bass drum or triangle. And I was like, nah. But when I got to middle school, I was like, oh, you can play, there's a jazz band in the middle school.
That's how.
So I was like, well, I get to play drum set. Oh, I'm going. You know, I'm saying, let's go. Like, I'm trying to be in the top band. I think we had two bands, A band and the B band.
And were you doing like Autumn Leaves, like Charlie Parker stuff?
Exactly, Autumn Leaves. Like, we had Low Rider, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. Like, Red Clay, like, you know what I mean? Just, but like, you know, like simple songs for like a big band, like a middle school big band, you know, just kind of fumbling their way through the songs type of, you know what I mean? But
Did you learn how to like read then, or were you reading by then just because you were in the church?
No, I didn't. I wasn't reading. No, I was just feeling it. Just going off instinct, you know? And so I was getting further than the kids that could read, because they didn't have no instinct. They could just kind of like play a simple rock beat, but they didn't know how to play anything else. And then but they could read a little bit, but it was like, at least I could make it feel like it's supposed to feel, and then some, you know what I mean? So,
well, and also like gospel music, I feel like is like some of the most intellectual, just because you have all these like crazy hits and arrangements, and it is a lot of about like pushing the instincts to know like when you can build stuff, when you can kind of like make it dynamic. So you're already instinctually getting all these kind of like nuances in your playing that most people aren't getting. So what's kind of cool about that though, it's like you're playing music that you may have not been kind of listening to, and then all of a sudden you're listening to this and playing it. And how big was the jazz band? Like maybe 20 people, 15 people, something like that?
If that, yeah, you know.
Wow. And like, did you kind of see like there were cats that were kind of not serious about it versus cats that were like really serious about it?
So check this out. Yeah. So did my parents, my friend's parents. So there was a few of us kids that were standing out. Oh, these kids are taking it kind of serious. Like, you know, they're standing out. So what they did was they gathered me, my friend William Artepe, played trumpet.
I love William Artepe.
You know,
dude.
William, you know, Will. Yeah. Me and Will, we've been rocking out since middle school, bro.
Crazy, dude. So, you know, his brother and I are in a singing group, dude.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's so wild, dude.
That's right. That's right.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that you knew William. That's crazy.
Yeah, we've been rocking out for a minute, man. So, you know, his dad was one of the people who gathered all these other kids from the surrounding middle schools. Like, all right, you kids are showing real interest in this music style. Like, why don't we get you guys together to play together as a combo, small group setting? So that's what we started doing. We got mentored by this other cat, David Young, who played trumpet. And he was in high school at the time, about to graduate at the local high school. He got those other cats to come mentor us for a few months and stuff. So it was cool, man. Anyway, like, we started at an early age and got, you know, some real good hands-on training as youth, you know. So then by the time we got to high school, we were already formed a band, and we're out there had gigs and clients out throughout the city.
So were you gigging with William a lot, like as a combo? Like, just, that's heavy, dude. That's awesome. You see these vinyls here? Wait, hold on. All these vinyls? That's because of William Artepe's dad.
Wow.
I was in college. I went and visited George, William's brother, and he was talking to me about vinyl. And he's like, oh, vinyl's way better than CDs. I was like, come on. And he was like, come downstairs. And
for about
3 hours, we played records. And I could not believe how good they sounded. And he started me on my vinyl collection.
He got some special shit, too. He ain't got no regular vinyl now. He's got some...
He's got some special edition versions of vinyls.
He's got special fucking hi-fi audio head. Like,
yep. Yeah, it was an experience. It was definitely an experience.
For sure.
That's amazing. That's so awesome. And were you guys writing original tunes then, or are you guys still doing like jazz heads? Kind of like,
we're doing jazz heads. We had a couple like originals that we were working through, you know. But it was more just like, let's play these tunes, like, you know, let's have fun, like, you know.
Right. And then you decided to audition for CalArts. Was that like one of your main schools, you wanted to come to California, you wanted to come to LA, or were you kind of like all over the place and kind of choosing music schools?
Oh, it's kind of all over the place, man. Honestly, it was like, I thought I really wanted to go to Berklee because I was like, oh, this just seems like where all the kids like in my style kind of go to, like, right. You know, and then, but Berklee, it like kind of sent this, and they did me bogus. They like sent me all the information, like the week that it was due. And I was like, I've been asking this. I was like inquiring for like months. I was like, yo, can you send me X, Y, and Z? Then they finally sent it to me. It was like, oh, it's due this week. I was like, I don't have time to get all my, you know, I mean, so whatever. Like, that didn't work out. I was looking at New England Conservatory.
Yeah, I know that's cool.
I was looking at University of Miami. And William actually told me about Cal Arts.
Wow.
He had checked it out. He was like, yo, you might want to check out Cal Arts, dude. Like, so I did. And that was history, you know?
That's wild, dude. I love William. William's been on this show as well, man. He and I go way back. So, man, I can't believe that.
That's my bro, man.
Dude, that's so crazy, dude. It's crazy. All right. So you're in Cal Arts. Now you're in a different level and kind of like caliber of musicians, right? Tell me what that experience was like just coming in. You would have been playing with all these cats, but they kind of make you do, and I know this from going to music school myself, it's like you're enjoying music on a different level, and then all of a sudden, you're working on music, and you meet all these amazing musicians, but school kind of almost gets in the way, like, of you just jamming with cats all the time and just practicing all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but also, like, CalArts is a different environment than, like, your ordinary university. Like, it's really catered for you to do your thing.
That's awesome. Really do.
I mean, yes, you have your core classes, but, you know, it's never like nothing crazy. You know, I mean, I was coming from a college prep high school, so I was used to like buckling down and hitting the books when it's time to get the books, but CalArts is a different experience. It was so free. The vibe was like, yes, you have assignments, but you can turn them in whenever you want, if you want.
Wow.
That's, you know, cool. Dude, and it's like, well, a lot of kids are like, oh, fuck it, I don't do whatever, and then, but not thinking like, how you gonna get graded if you don't do the work, if you don't, you know what I mean? So by the end of the school year, fools were like, yo, why am I failing? I was like, well, did you do any work? I'm like, no. What do you expect? You know what I mean? Like,
right. Did you know Lorca Hart by chance?
No, I didn't know Lorca when I was there, no.
So Lorca was my first drummer. That's how I knew of CalArts.
But I know Lorca. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know him when I was there.
He was my first drummer in NK Band for years. Love that cat. He's just such a great cat. One of my favorite people on the planet, man. Let's play. You know what, Sam? We're going to play the first YouTube link. This is a sound check video of you playing with Larry Carlton.
Thank you.
insane, dude. I was literally going, what the? Dude, I can't believe, A, that was a sound check, and B, dude, the jump from you graduating from school into playing with Larry Carlton. Tell me what that journey was like, because nobody just comes out of school and they're playing with Larry Carlton. Tell me what that whole kind of searching for gigs and kind of going through that was like for you.
It was kind of gradual, man, because when I was in Cal Arts, I was making friends. You know, my buddy William went to USC. So he was in the music school over there. So I was meeting those cats, making homies over there. And the Monk Institute was at USC that time. So I was meeting
those Will was, I think, 2 years younger than me at USC. So I think he was there right when it came.
Mm-hmm. So it was like a good time just to be around there. Just, you know, so there's a lot of musicians in that area. I was meeting young guys and being a part of that scene, you know, and that helped. While I was Cal Arts, I was doing gigs outside in L.A. I wasn't just up at school. I was doing the drive back and forth. And, you know, so that when I got out of there, started making homies and create a network, you know, and your name gets around town, you know, started doing these little gigs and stuff. And my buddy, Semi, who plays guitar, was like, yo, my boy Travis is looking for a drummer. I'll give you a number. And he hit me up and he was like, yo, can you meet up, you know, Friday over here at the spot? And I show up and it's like him and his dad. And I was like, I didn't know who his dad was. You know, it was like,
wow.
I was like, oh, okay, let's jam, you know, like, and we just have fun. We're just vibing, you know? And I think that's what got me the gig. Was like, I wasn't like intimidated. I wasn't like trying to show off. I wasn't trying to be anything other than like, all right, let's make music. Let's have fun. Let's create a vibe. And I think that went a long way.
Well, you know, what's so funny, I don't even know if I've ever told you this. I knew you were a bad motherfucker when, you know, Adam Gus has been my drummer since 2005. And we'd had so many bands open for us at House of Blues over the years. And when The Endangered played, Adam was up on the, you know, up on the balcony. We were just like watching. He's like, man, I can't believe I got to follow Gene Coy. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, man. He's like, Gene Coy, he's like one of the best drummers around, dude. And he's like, I can't believe we're playing after Gene Coy. Like, I gotta go warm up, man. And he would just like go into the room and he would just be like working extra hard. Usually he just sits there with heavy sticks and he does these little rudiments, you know, like, but he was like, oh man, I gotta bring it because Gene Coy is playing before us. You know what I mean? And I was like, listening to you guys play, and I was like, God damn, this is like an all-star R&B band. Like, you have Maya Sykes on vocals. You had Frank Abraham on bass. Lincoln Cleary. Who's the cat on guitar? I can't remember who you had on guitar.
Mick Block.
Yeah, that guy was super crazy good, dude. Did you know him from Cal Arts, or where'd you?
Yeah, that's how I met. I met Nick at Cal Arts.
What about Lincoln? Did you just know him from the LA?
So I met Nick at Cal Arts, and you know, Nick and I have been good homies ever since. And then Frank had moved back to L.A. from Berkeley. He went to Berkeley for school. So after that, he moved back to L.A. And that's how I met Frank around that time. And then Frank introduced me to Winkin' because they were roommates.
Oh, at Berkeley? Oh, that's
no, they were roommates back here in L.A. I think in L.A. So, and that's how I met Lincoln. And then I met Maya on some other gig. Like, Maya was doing background vocals for this dude. What was this? JT something. I forgot his last name, but we had a gig. We had like two gigs. We did like a gig in Vegas or something, or we did a gig in, no, what was it? Arizona for like, it was All-Star Weekend in Arizona or some shit like that. And we all got this house and I met Maya. Maya was hella cool on that gig. I was like, oh, she's cool as hell. She can sing.
And she's such a great singer, dude. She's like, I think she's like my favorite singer for anything gospel, soul, R&B, anything. I mean, she's just ridiculous, dude. Yeah. So, well, I remember seeing you guys play, and I was just like, damn, this is like an all-star R&B band. And I don't know if you remember, but I went up to you, and I was like, yo, man, we got to do something together. I was like, and you were like, yeah, man, cool, man. I was like, yo, this cat's cool as shit. And then I saw you play with Seal at the Hollywood Bowl. And you know, Seal was like, I'd like to introduce you to my drummer, Gene Coy. And I was just like, this guy is playing everything that you can imagine with everybody. And then we ended up sharing a rehearsal space, and that's when I was like, yo, I've been wanting to start this blues thing, and I want you to be the cat, because I've always wanted to do something with you just because of that. That first show I saw you play with The Endangered. And, yeah, man, I've been going through all the recordings we've been doing on this record, and it's amazing. But meanwhile, you've been playing with Bob Reynolds. You've been playing with Rick Ross. We're going to play some of those tracks, but first I want to play one of your drum solos. Sam, we're going to play the second YouTube link. Let's play the drum solo on that. That was wild, man. Wild. I got to ask you, when you're soloing, like, what are you thinking? Are you thinking phrases? Are you thinking rhythm? Are you thinking, are you keeping time? Like, what are you thinking when you're creating a solo like that? Because that was insane.
All of that. You said all that. All that's inside of there, you know?
Right.
That song was actually a Kendrick Lamar song called How Much a Dollar Costs. And what I basically, that's my group Jazz Gene, a version of my group Jazz Gene, where I like to take basically songs, popular songs that resonate with me, and do an instrumental kind of jazz version of them, you know what I mean? But so that was one of them. We also done like Black Hole Sun. We got a version of that out there. It's crazy.
I've seen that. Yeah,
that's the shit.
And it's so killing because your interpretations of these songs are just, they're so wild, man. And
yeah, it's like, about bringing something different, like, you know, like, what else can we do with it? You know,
right.
we might not play it the same way again. You know, that's the beauty of it. You know, it's like these songs are already powerful enough that they can take on any life of their own. You know what I mean?
Well, what's super crazy too, and I'm sure drummers have either told you this or they will tell you this. Like, you could take one of your solos, and it's like you're putting on a clinic. You literally are putting on a clinic when you're doing these solos. And, you know, Andre and I have heard that, even on Manic Depression, when you're doing this big solo outro, it's like This is so wild. And we're trying to listen to you and also trying to like lock in at the same time. But it's like, man, the things that you do, I just don't hear a lot of drummers doing. It's like hyper creative. And I hope you never stop being that. And I asked you a long time ago, I said, what's kind of like one of your dream, what's your dream project? And you were like, you said the coolest answer. You're like, I like any project where I can be myself. And I was like, that I'm going to steal that answer, but I'm going to quote him every time too. Dude, it really is true, because like when you hear who you are and your interpretation on everything, it's pretty wild, dude. Do you ever feel, are you ever stumped by something when you listen to something, or when, who's a drummer right now that you listen to that you're like, man, I can't believe whoever it is, who's a drummer right now that kind of like stumps you a little bit?
Eric Harlan.
And how so? Like chops, feel, all of it?
All of it. His creativity, his placement, it's just his tastefulness. Like, have you heard Taylor Eichstein's newest album?
No.
Piano player? Oh my God. Phenomenal. Taylor got a bunch of Grammys just recently for that album. But if you get a chance to check out Taylor Axie's album, man, it's got Eric Harlan on it, and it's beautiful drumming, man. Beautiful, wow. Beautiful drumming. But yeah, it's my favorite drummer, and he wows me. I'm like, I listen to it, I'm just like, I want to quit. I'm like, damn, I want to quit. Or no, it's not really I want to quit, but it's more like, damn.
Well, it's both.
I want to get like that. I want to get like that. You know what I mean? Like, I want.
Well,
that.
You know, I always feel like it's a punch in the gut, and then like this enlightened inspiration breath that you get at the same time.
Yeah, it's like, so, damn.
It's like it hurts, and it hurts good. You know what I mean?
You gotta keep pushing. You gotta keep pushing.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to ask you too. Like, you and I share a rehearsal space, and you are in the room a lot. Do you find yourself, you know, and I asked another artist this earlier, do you find like there's this monkey on your back that you always have to practice, or do you feel like it just gets you closer to progress and where you want to be as a player when you're just practicing? What is your practice philosophy?
Practice makes you better, for sure. But at a certain point, I think like you got to figure out what to practice and how to practice. Because you just can't do the regular shit that you used to do, like, because you know it, you know what I mean? So I think it's about finding new ways to practice. And whether that be, I mean, I think at this point in my journey, you know, my practice regimen is a little different. It's more like maintenance than like, let me figure out how to do this one thing. It's more like if I come across something, then it's like, oh, okay, let's figure it out. But it's not like I used to practice when I was younger. You know, it's not that same energy, not that same regiment. You know, it's a little
different. You're sitting hours, yeah. I mean, for me, what I tell you guys this too. It's like I practice a lot, like right here, sitting down. And when we do rehearsals, for me, it's a different feeling because I'm singing into a mic and I'm standing up. And it's like, man, I never practice at home. Standing and singing into a mic, so it's kind of like you're taking some of those practice things that you've been doing, and you're just like redoing them. But I also feel like even if you practice like that and you play with people, it changes. It's always going to feel a little bit different when you're interacting with people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's practice, and then it's like, how kind of practice? What are you practicing? Are you practicing your performance?
Right.
Are you practicing your practice? You know what I mean? Right. Like your practice regimen. You know what I mean? Like, so in that regard, it's like, that's why I think it's healthy to keep like getting cast together and playing with people. It's like, yo, that's because you're practicing performing. Even though it's just y'all in the room just having fun, you're still performing.
Yes. I find this like you tend to do that better when it's just a rehearsal because it's a little bit more controlled and you're almost like, you're practicing for each other, which is like, there's such a cool vibe with rehearsals because you're playing for each other and nobody else. And I kind of feel like there's a little bit more magic in those experiences than having a crowd there sometimes, you know?
Yeah, it can be like that for sure.
And you played some amazing, you just played with Bob Reynolds in London at, what's the name of the venue? I just blanked on it.
Ronnie Scott's.
Yeah, Ronnie Scott's. You played Ronnie Scott's. You played a sold out tour. And you played kind of like sold out shows at Ronnie Scott's. When you're playing like on the road like that, do you feel like venues, rooms, everything changes, the vibe of what you're doing? Or you kind of feel like you're consistent no matter where you go, and it just everything is just like about just staying creative and just alert.
It's never consistent. Every room is different, you know, and every crowd is different.
Right.
All we can do is control what we do, you know, but we also do feed off that energy of the crowd. Like, you know, some places we play, they applaud after every solo. Some places you play, they wait till the song is over and then applaud. Or some places they don't applaud at all.
Right.
You know what I mean? They wait till the end of the concert to applaud. You're like, damn, what? And then they like, you like walk off stage like, damn, they hate it, you know? Right. And then like you find out they loved it. This is just the way they interact with the art. That's just the way they, you know, they interact with the artist. They like, they're very reserved and they want to wait till the end of the performance and they give it up. And then they like, they can't stop talking about you. But during the show, you're like, it's crickets out there. You know what I mean? Like, but some audiences are like giving it up, yelling at you, woo, you know, giving you the right woos and all that shit. Like, you know, like you feel that, you know, you know.
I heard this quote from Chris Martin of Coldplay. He said something cool. He's like, I think as artists and performers, when you're performing, you're on this like, you're on this thin line of absolute confidence and absolute insecurity. And it's like, you're just fighting to get to that place where you feel like everything's good. But like what you said, when the audience doesn't react the way you think, you start questioning like, are they digging what we're doing? Are we doing the right thing? Or is this the right vibe? Because you're not really reading it in the way that you're thinking they're reading it in the same way. So it's like this like dance where you're trying to find that footing of where you, how you're going to feel, you know.
Yeah.
But usually it's good. It's usually
it can even be like the crowd was way further away tonight than they were yesterday. Yesterday's crowd, they're like a foot away from me. Now tonight's crowd, they're like 25 feet away from the stage. Like, you know, that makes a big difference.
Right.
You're standing tonight, and they were sitting down yesterday. Like, you know, it's a different vibe. Like, it's a whole different, you know.
I also feel like spacing between the band on stage, it adds a lot. I mean, I've been on big stages, I've been on small stages, and it's like, it adds a lot when you're kind of tight together and you're looking at it. Whereas, like, when you're separated, it's like, oh, shit, where are we sometimes?
Yeah,
and
it's a little isolated.
It's a little isolated. I want to play this Bilal cover of Is This Love, because I think it's a really cool interpretation. Sam, I think it's the third YouTube link, but let's play it.
Shelter of my single bed.
So happening, man. So happening. Dude, I didn't know you knew Miguel Atwood Ferguson. He's another USC cat, dude.
We all met around the same time, man.
Wild. And did you know Zane Musa at CalArts? Was he there at the same time?
I knew Zane, but he wasn't there at the same time. He had just left, I think.
Wow. Yeah, so Zane, Zane was in the band, in my band for a long time. So, like, I got to tell you, a lot of the most talented people I know came out of CalArts. So it's just awesome that you merged with all these USC cats, too. It's like, that's superpower stuff right there, man. That's superpower stuff. So what I love, too, is, like, you play in so many different styles. You know, like I mentioned, we're doing this blues trio. You do this jazz thing with Bob Reynolds. You do this jazz thing with, heavy cats like Larry Carlton. You've been playing with Thundercat. You've been doing some hip hop too with Rick Ross. Tell me like how you switch gears when it comes to hip hop. Cause man, there's nothing better than live drums when it comes to hip hop. I love live drums.
I mean, you are what you eat, man. So it's like, if you listen to the music and you digest it, you can play it, you can feel it. That project with Rick Ross, that was actually, it's funny how that happened. Cause I got called, my buddy Sam Barsh, who's a super dope producer, piano player in LA, who I know from since back in the day in Chicago. He's connected in the hip hop realm with DJ Khalil, who's another crazy, super dope hip hop producer. And they hit me up and was like, yo, can you come through the studio? We need some drums. And I was like, word. So I show up and it's Common actually is in the studio.
Wow.
And they're like, yo, let's just vibe. They're vibing out. Just, they got this electronic drum set up. And so DJ Khalil is at the computer and like kind of going, like picking out drum sounds. Like, well, we're agreeing on drum sounds. Like, all right, this kick sounds good. This try a different tom. Like figuring the kit out, trying to piece it together. Finally come to a kit. And I'm like, oh, this is a vibe. And so, we're in the room just vibing with Sam's on keys and my homie Daniel Seif. He's on bass. He's another part of that writing crew. And we're just vibing, man. Common's in there writing, vibing with us. And, wow. We track with him. We come up with that vibe. And then months later, it's a Rick Ross song. So I was like, It's like, okay, whatever.
Did you find the story about that? Did they take the beat and they were like, yo, let's give this to Rick Ross?
From what I understand, man, it's like in the hip hop realm, it's like, your song could start out as something, and then in 4, 5, 6, 7 producers later, it could end up with something totally different than what you originally thought it was going to be. You know what I mean?
Right. So how did you know it was a Rick Ross track? Did someone say, hey?
Because they hit me up. They were like, yo, remember that song we did? Yo, it's a Rick Ross song now. And I was like, oh, shit. So,
Well, let's listen to it real quick so people get a reference. Here's Rick Ross with Gene Coy on drums. Sorry, that was the wrong one. Nope, that's not it either. Sam, let's try. Do we have another link? Let me see if I can.
It's one of those.
Oh, we don't have another link. That's weird. All right. Let me see if. All right, well, what's the name of the song? We'll have to play it on another time we do this.
It's called Scientology.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Sam says he's got it. Let's play Scientology.
Welcome to the Scientology of hip-hop, where you must sign a lifelong contract as well. Welcome. You're so lucky to grow in age, lucky to go insane. They say they spotted some cancer, mucus built on your brain, but you tell me to keep on praying. Really, this is a blessing. Many been long and gone. Family, your true possessions. Admit I made some mistakes. Can't blame it on adolescence. So infected with greed, having something to see. I was running in circles and it was right next to me. This must have been God's wishes, cause all my friends went to prison. Nothing like Brian Williams, but when they come home, I kiss them. Hold on, give me a second, refreshing my recollection. Labels, we playing chess. Nothing I'm not contesting. You niggas is stupid, thinking Craig Kalman won't send his shooters. They've been robbing for years, no fear to blow out your noodles. Looking at Big and Pop, imagining all the profits. A fiend sitting at home, picture me rolling, knocking. No royalties in a pocket. Who really is there to blame? Each man feed a man. Children, we get a game. Scientology prophets, you better stay in your lane. Let me roll up some green. Economics, I pray you go back to college. All I'm seeing is bitches for queens, go back to Hollis. Made it without a father, my mother that I acknowledge. Nor a crooked attorney, last name Saddlemy, I'm breaching his contracts. Preachers and gun claps, smoking at Mike Dean until my lungs collapse. Bun B in action, Bronson, I'm seeing no colors. If you with me, you with me, I'm a ride for my brother. Honor and pride, put the salaries aside. It's land in the water, put your prayers in the sky. Respect me as a man as you looking in my eye. Let's address the best, won't be no problem down the line. See Confederate flags, but I got a flag of mine. Yeah, yeah, I got a flag of mine. Yeah, bang, we can do it then. I got that money for Lil Wayne, let's do it again.
Man, so killing. You know what I love about your pockets? Like, you got this pocket like Questlove when you need it. You got these chops like Dennis Chambers when you need it. And it's all a part of what you are as a drummer. It's pretty crazy. Tell me real quick, you know, you went on the road with Santana and his son, and Dennis Chambers was kind of like the drummer that you were kind of like learning from every night. Tell me what that experience was like, because Dennis Chambers is one of the craziest, most badass cats like yourself. And here are two cats on the same stage, on the same tour. Tell me what that was like for you.
Well, first of all, I was like starstruck more to be around him than I was like anybody else. I was nervous, you know. I was like, damn, like you're Dennis Chambers, and you know, what am I doing here? You know what I mean? Like, that was my feeling. But he was so cool, man, and kind of took me under and was like, you know, man, like, you know, you're a cat, you're one of the cats, like, you know, like treating me as one of the cats, really. And, you know, dude, it was a trip. Like, you know, it was a real eye-opening experience, though. Like, you know, learning, sitting there under him and, like, seeing how he approaches music and how reserved he can be, knowing that he has all the chops in the world and all this musicality that he's only giving you 10-25% of what he really can do. And, like, that, but it's, you know, but it's cashing his checks in, because this is what you call him to do, the job. It's like, at an early young age, I was like, so I want to play all that shit. I want to do it. And, like, I was doing that, you know, I was 18, you know, but to watch him and be like, man, like, I can do all that shit, but look, I don't have to. I can just do this one little thing and be cool. You're like, you know, like, and I got my other gigs where I can do all that other shit for, but you know what I mean? It was just, for me, it was a learning experience of like, man, like, all right, this is how you play a gig and play with taste and reserve and you know, just be musical.
You know? Well, it's also that restraint. I always find there's like that, I think that seasoned restraint is, you, there's no shortcut to that. You just, it takes time to get there. And when you get there, you just know when to use it all the time. And I find that to be remarkable. So I'm sure you found it in the same way, because it's like you pursue these, like, oh, I want to play these fills, I want to play these licks, I want to, whatever it is, vocal licks, doesn't matter. And then you realize it comes down to like being simple when it needs to be simple.
And I'm just thankful that I had the insight to just recognize that at a young age, because a lot of cats that are young don't have that sensibility to be like, oh, this is really where it's at. They start chasing that chops, chasing the chops. And it's like, okay, that's beautiful. It's art in itself, but you got to be able to make art after that. You got to be able to make art with other people.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it can't just be you all the time doing all the brushstrokes and da da da. Look what we did. That's not how you make music. It's,
yeah.
Let somebody else add to it, and then somebody else will add to it. Then you add, like, you know what I mean, or don't add something to it. You know what I mean? Like,
this is why we're in a band, Gene. We're even wearing the same color shirt, man. Come on. So where can people find you online or at gigs to hear you play? Tell me what's up next for you.
All right, I'll be Friday night at ETA Highland Park with Horace Bray and Nick Campbell.
All right, all right. And you got a couple other gigs coming up too, right? You got aren't you playing with you're playing with a couple cats. I just saw, I think Bob Reynolds posted something with you, and Lau Tizer posted something with you. Aren't you doing something with Lau? Baked potato? No, not baked potato. You're doing what's the place in Bel Air?
Vibrato.
Vibrato. When are you doing that? Do you remember that?
I don't know when we're doing that. I think that might be.
Is that January?
It's got to be January, I think.
All right, all right, all right. Well, there you go. There's two gigs people can look up.
Sam First on December 29th.
All right, all right.
The Russell and Sirota.
Well, Gene, you've been a badass. I'm going to have you on again in about 9-10 months.
Nice.
I love playing music with you. You've been a very big source of inspiration for me to, like, get my shit together and just keep playing with this trio. And it's a pleasure to just make music with you. And thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood, man. We're going to have you back, all right?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, bro. Appreciate you, man.
One last thing. What's your Instagram? It's Gene Coy on drums?
Yeah.
Gene Coy drums.
Gene Coy drums.
At Gene Coy drums. Check him out, everybody. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Gene, we'll see you guys next week. Happy holidays. Be safe. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.